Thank you for joining us on this episode of Eminent Teachnology with Dr. Rochelle Newton and Drew Stennett, where we examine current and emerging technologies through the lens of diversity and equality. So hello, everybody, and welcome back to a new episode of Eminent Teachnology with Dr. Rochelle Newton and Drew Stennett. Today, we're going to do our part two on security tips. Rochelle and I were just having a good conversation about, I think this is something that I am not always great about, but is explaining things in words that non-technical people can understand. I think back to in our first part, when we were talking about password managers and using a password, and I was like, well, yeah, like, obviously you have to use like a 32 character, completely random password if you want to be any sorts of secure. And I thought it was very poignant where Rochelle, you were like, nobody's going to remember that. And it's like, yeah, that is also a fair point. So it's good to find some balance there.
So Drew, let me ask you some questions. So what are the most common things that consumers, i.e. not necessarily people in their workplace, but at home, that they should look out in terms of how to stay secure when they're online? What are some of your common recommendations?
So I think number one is to not reuse passwords. And this sort of jumps back to our password manager thing last week. But whenever you reuse a password, you're like, every time you reuse a password, you're exponentially increasing your risk of losing that data or losing access to that account. Like, unfortunately, the world we live in is your password's going to get leaked at some point. And while like having one password or a couple passwords makes things very easy to remember, whenever one of those passwords gets leaked, then you possibly lose access to multiple sites instead of just a single site, or more so something embarrassing happens on that site where, you know, they delete all of your data or something like that. I think one other thing that can really help, and one thing that I wanted to point out today, is using multi-factor authentication where possible. I know that's another one of those annoyances. Like, even for me, like, I hate having to do multi-factor authentication whenever I log in, but I've just sort of come to accept it as, well, I need to stay secure, so I might as well do multi-factor authentication.
Can you tell us what multi-factor authentication is, or two-factor authentication? Mm-hmm. Some places word it differently, but can you tell us what that is?
Yeah, absolutely. So multi-factor or two-factor authentication is usually when someone logs in or has a credential, the credential consists of a username and a password. The username might be your email. The username might be just some name you made up. It can really be whatever, but it's sort of like a public part of a credential. The private part of your credential is the password. So you put those two things together and you can log into something. Maybe 10 or 15 years ago, if not longer, people sort of found that that wasn't enough, because usernames are easy to guess because, you know, email addresses are public. Passwords were getting easier to guess. Passwords were being reused, so they were easier to find. And sort of the tech community in general just found that, you know, username and password is not enough. So what they started doing was adding on a second form of authentication, or even a third in some cases. What most of these places do is, like, the one option for a multi-factor would be, after you put in your name and password, the company sends you a text message. So if you have your phone, you'll get like a little 6-digit code that you have to put in order to authenticate. And if you don't have that code, you can't do it. What I like to do, which is probably a little more technical than what our listeners have, is I have a little authenticator application on my phone, which, instead of using text messages on sites that support it, it's pretty simple to set up. You can just scan this thing with your phone and it gives you a private key that gets stored on your phone. And then that private key generates passcodes that are time-based. So you get a new passcode, which is sort of like a second password that's only gonna be good, you know, for 30 or 60 seconds. But it increases your security a ton. The bad part is now you have to keep track of this app on your phone generating all these random passwords. And, you know, people like to upgrade their phones, change their phones out. And you want to be sure that you have that second factor completely backed up, or you're going to lose complete access to your accounts.
So what's my vulnerability if I do not set up a second factor? Is it just that I need to create a stronger password? Or is it to the point where we are in with hacks and ransomware and spyware that we need, everybody needs a second authentication, like two-factor authentication? Mm-hmm. Because I noticed that Apple has now, you know, in addition to, you know, whatever, they have face biometrics, you know, facial recognition. So is it that we need to do that? Everyone needs to consider a two-factor authentication?
I would say everyone should consider it for their important data. So I consider, like, if I have, I don't know, 100 different internet accounts on different things, I consider my Gmail like super important, right? So for my Gmail, I'm going to have a good password, and I'm definitely going to use multi-factor there. For things like, for things that may have my credit card stored, mm-hmm. I would probably make sure that those have two-factor authentication if available. Mm-hmm. For things like my Buffalo Wild Wings reward card membership, I don't really care so much, right? Like, there's something where I'm going to make sure it has a good password that's in my password manager, but I don't really so much care about the second factor in that case. And in fact, I'm not even sure Buffalo Wild Wings offers a second factor.
So two-factor when it's important, when the data or the information you're using and storing is important. Mm-hmm.
Excellent. Yep, okay. Exactly.
Okay. So, go ahead.
No, you go ahead. I'm sorry.
So my next question is this, and it's not exactly on the same topic, but not too far off either. So I am at Starbucks. Mm-hmm. I never go to Starbucks, but I'm at Starbucks. And when I go in there, it pops up and says a Wi-Fi. So it might say Spectrum, or it may say some company's Wi-Fi. So what do you recommend in terms of being secure in a space where you're available to use their Wi-Fi, especially if you're cost conscious and you want to save your data rates, you know, when you're out and about? What are your recommendations for using public Wi-Fi or, you know, company-based Wi-Fi? And then what do you suggest we do if we have, so for example, you're outside all of a sudden, you get some kind of alert that you really need to check. So i.e. your bank says, you know, did you spend $5,000 5 minutes ago and you need to log into your bank, but you're not at home. What are your recommendations on how to stay safe when you're not, you know, at home or yep. someplace secure?
Yep. So first off, if I were to ever get a notification about a bank notice, something sort of like flashy and urgent like that, I think the yeah. first thing to remember is don't click any links that that alert sends you, because that sounds like it has a high probability of being some sort of phishing attack where someone wants to steal your bank credentials. If you do get something like that, I'm not saying like ignore it, but close the text and go to your bank's website and go through the normal process of checking out your account that way. If you're not at home, VPNs are always good. So I'm not sure of what the best free VPNs are nowadays, but if you're outside of your house and you need to get on Wi-Fi, outside Wi-Fi is a little bit scary, right? Because you're connecting your computer up to, I'll call it like a hose, right? And this hose is connected to Starbucks, which hopefully is going to be okay, but you don't really know that for sure, right? You don't know what Starbucks is using for their internet provider and all that. One main thing to remember if you don't have access to a VPN and you need to connect to a website is always look for that HTTPS secure lock screen at the top of your browser. HTTPS is the secure version of websites. It uses encryption both ways so that people can't fake being your bank site, or at least not easily. In the olden days, that didn't exist. The olden days was just everything was HTTP. Nothing was encrypted. Everything, you just sort of had to trust whoever you were going to. So if your bank, for example, say I'm a bad actor that works at Starbucks. If we didn't have HTTPS, I could rather easily redirect anything from bankofamerica.com onto my laptop. And if people weren't looking at their URL bar for that HTTPS or secure, you know, green lock up at the top there, they would have no way of knowing that I'm not really Bank of America, that I'm, you know, weird guy at Starbucks who's trying to steal all of their information. So looking for that green lock bar at the top is, I would say, is a requirement if you're ever somewhere where you can't get on a VPN and you have to then connect up somewhere public.
Okay. And so one of the other things that I hear a lot people talk about is not using Wi-Fi at all, but just using their data. Mm-hmm. Any thoughts about whether they should do that?
I'm not against using your data. I would still recommend ensuring that everything is HTTPS, though. One thing that I put on all of my browsers is you used to need a web browser plugin called HTTPS only, which would only take you to HTTPS sites, mm-hmm. which maybe 5 years ago, that was sort of painful because not all sites had HTTPS, right? Like before 5 or 6 years ago, to make your site secure or to give your site HTTPS, you actually had to pay money to a company that would give you a certificate. Mm-hmm. And, you know, not everybody running websites has money to do that. The banks do, for sure. Businesses do, but not everything is going to do it. A few years ago, or I guess about 5 or 6 years ago, a company came out. I believe they were spun out of the Electronic Frontier Foundation, the EFF.
Yeah.
And they came up with a way to provide folks free certificates so that pretty much anybody can get an HTTPS certificate if they want one now. And because of that, almost all sites support HTTPS now. It is very rare to find a site that is HTTP only. And because of that, you can change your browser to say, hey, never use HTTP. And so that's what I've started doing is, if there's a site that's HTTP only, I get a huge warning if I try to go there that says, hey, this thing doesn't support HTTPS. Are you really sure that you want to go there? And honestly, like most of the time, I don't want to go there. Like, it's not really needed. Like, you know, all the stuff that's good supports HTTPS.
And that's an app you can add to your phone or to your mobile devices?
So it can be a browser extension. The browser extension is called HTTPS only, but okay. Firefox and I believe Chrome now also have that built in at this point. So you can just go to your settings and say, always go to secure sites, never go to, I think you can have it warn, right? Like you can say, warn me if I'm about to go to an HTTP site, never go to an HTTP site. And I just hit never go. And so far, knock on wood, that has served me very well.
Excellent. Excellent. Okay. So my next question is about how do we stay secure in the world where the recommendation had always been to change your password every so often.
Mm-hmm.
Do you still hold to that? And if so, you know, how do you know what's a good password?
Yeah. So that's a great question. And the guidance on that has actually changed now, so that now the recommendation is to not rotate your password unless you know that it has been compromised or unless there's a possibility it has been compromised. So back in, you know, and again, we'll talk about like the old days here, right? Like you used to have to rotate your password every day. So people would set their password to Drew 12345, and then they needed to rotate it and they would say Drew 12346 and then rotate it again. And it's going to be Drew 12347. And they were just like, you know, tacking on numbers and not making things more secure. And so because of this, the standards board was like, hey, actually, this is a bad idea. We shouldn't be forcing people to rotate their passwords. Instead, they should have good passwords, but they should keep them for as long as, maybe not as long as they want, but for a pretty good while, right? Like if there's been a breach at your company or a breach at the site that you're using, yeah, wow. You probably do want to change it at that point. But short of that, just keep the long good password and you should be fine. At least that's the recommendation by the standards boards, which I tend to agree with. The problem there is it takes businesses a long time to catch up with that standard, right? So there are still lots of places that say, hey, you know, 10 years ago, the standard was this. We haven't updated our standard. So we've still got to use that old one until we, you know, work through all of the kinks and everything.
So what's a good long password? So someone told me they had a password that I love my mom, and they changed the O's to zeros, but that was their password. Is that a good password?
So this may be an unpopular opinion, but I do not think that is a good password. So the problem there is, like, it's better than I love my mom with no special characters, right? Like, it's definitely better than that. But the bad guys of the world have found ways to say, hey, we know that people are going to spell mom and they're going to change that O for a zero. And we know that they're going to change, you know, the I to a one. So it's just as easy for, not just as easy, but it is almost as easy for them to guess I love my mom with special characters as opposed to I love my mom with no special characters. What I like to do, well, I love my password managers. So most of my passwords are 32 character long. I'm never going to remember them. When my wife needs one of them, I'm like, oh Lord, this is going to be so painful to get this password to her. Like, like, oh, you mean we got to log into Amazon again? Oh no. Like, hold on, here it comes. Like, you know, it's painful, but if you don't have to do it too often, it's not too bad. For things that I do have to remember. So for things like the password to open my password manager, I've started using, so there are applications, and you can even do this on the password manager websites, that will create a phrase for you. Mm-hmm. So it will be like four or five, I call them non-words, but they're words that make phonetic sense. Right? Like, it's going to be five or six letters that do make something that you can remember and stick in your brain, but it's not going to be a real word. Like, instead of money, you know, it's not going to, one of those parts isn't going to be the word money. One of the parts is going to be like, it's hard thinking of not words, but like, you know.
Today is Tuesday in the afternoon.
Yeah, or even like today is February in the afternoon, right? Yeah. Like, February is not a day, but it's a word that you can remember, and that makes things a little bit easier. Like, the real words are the tricky part. Like, hackers can guess real words even if there's several words strewn together. So using, you know, and again, like, the more words you use, the better it's going to be. The longer your password, the better. So always try and think of a password that's long enough for you to remember, but still as long as you can make it. I think sentences are still a good way to do it, especially for folks that have a hard time remembering longer passwords. Uh-huh. So like, if you wanted to say, like, you know, today is Tuesday morning, I would probably not use that as a password. I would probably switch that around and say, today, exclamation point, Sunday, star, songs are sung, three, hamsters rule, seven, or something like that. Like, not an exact sentence, but something with enough words that I can think up. And I think the trick there is giving yourself a little time to practice it. So like, that thing that I just said, I was sort of looking around at things in my room. It's like, oh, there's a fake hamster, you know, there's a calendar. But I still don't really remember, like, even though I just said it, I don't remember it. So when I need to think up one of those long ones, I write it down and I just start practicing typing it in. And after, I mean, it usually takes me a couple days of using it, but after a couple days, it pretty much gets stuck in there, and then I can throw away, shred up my sheet of paper that I wrote it down on, and, you know, throw it away, burn it, do whatever you want to get rid of it.
Yeah, that makes sense. So And that's one of the things we definitely tell people don't do, is to write your password down, especially if you write it in a place where you're not going to remember where you put it.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And so, and I would sort of add on to that, like, you don't want to write your password down and tape it to the front of your computer, you know, like that's bad. And you probably don't want to leave it hanging around. I read a quote recently about a piece of secure software. This software like stores password, like its purpose is to store passwords. And one of the things they put in their documentation was like, hey, like we're very secure. We're as secure as we can be. But putting your password in us is not as secure as writing it down and putting it in a safety deposit box and storing it in a bank, right? Like, if you write your password down and put it in a safety deposit box and put it in a bank, that's pretty secure. Like, that's not many people are getting into that. I'm not going to put any of my passwords in a, you know, bank's safety security box because I don't really understand how all that works, but it sounds very legitimate. Would I write a password down and put it like in our fireproof safe? Yeah, I don't see how that's like super bad. Like that's if the fireproof safe ever gets stolen, which could definitely happen, then I'm going to need to change that password. But short of that, I wouldn't worry about it too much.
Yeah. So we're running out of time. So I don't want to use up all your time. I can't believe I'm turning into Drew in my old age.
I love it, Rochelle. It's great.
No, it's not good. It's not good at all. But I want to end, if we can, with one thing we want to leave people with. If you could think about being secure online, what would be the thing that you think would be the right words to tell people? If you're going to be online, whether you're at home or in a bar or wherever you are, what's the one thing you would say, hey, we all need to think about this when we're out and about to stay secure online, mm-hmm. keep our data and our identity secure?
So I would say this probably changes for me every day, but recently what I've been trying to keep in mind is do not click on any links that are sent to your email or to your phone. Like, just don't click on them. If you get sort of talking about how, like a few minutes ago when we were talking about getting a message from your bank, right? Like, I've seen those sort of things before, and it's very like, it gets your adrenaline going. You see something and it's like, oh God, something's happening with the bank. Is somebody stealing all my money? I need to fix that like right away. But the problem is you click one of those links and you don't know it's from your bank, right? It may be, instead of Bank of America, it might be bankofamericas.com or something very similar that your eyeball is not going to pick up when you go to their website. And then you're going to put your username and password in there, and now you've mm-hmm. lost your username and password. So what I would recommend to everybody is whenever you get those emails or texts or anything, definitely investigate them, but don't click on the links they sent you. You know, go to the website yourself. So if you get a text from Bank of America that says someone's stealing all your money, absolutely check it out, but go to bankofamerica.com and do your investigation there. Leave the URL from the text or the email just totally alone. And it's hard because a lot of companies nowadays will send you emails with links in them, which is, I think it's becoming bad practice, but you know, people still do it because it's very easy to include a link that you want people to click. And most of the time that's going to be totally fine. But you know, that one of 20 or one of 30 or one of 100 times that you click it and it's someone doing something malicious, that is really going to suck. So don't click anything. Don't click any links. Especially in email or text. Always go to the source first.
Well, Drew, thank you so much for this. This has been very helpful. We have learned a lot and we still have a long way to go. We will have one more in this series and then we will move on to another topic, but we do want you to know how to be successful and safe online. And I think we'll have Drew talk with us about phishing and spam and ransomware. And I know we hit on that a little bit last week, but we'll have Drew talk to us about that some more and give us some more pointers on how to be on our best behavior when we're not around. So thank you all for listening. Drew is always the smartest person in the conversation. So make sure you're listening to him.
That's what I tell myself anyway.
Exactly. I think I told you this the other day. I always tell people I'm not the smartest cookie in the jar, but I'm in the jar.
Yes. Yes, absolutely.
Absolutely. So thank you so much. And thank you all for listening to us. Please subscribe. to our podcast and send us your feedback, comments. We're always grateful to have you listen with us. I am Dr. Rochelle Newton and Drew.
And I am Drew Stinnett. And thank you all so much. And thank you, Rochelle.
Thank you for listening to Eminent Teachnology. If you like the show, please review, subscribe, and recommend us to your friends and family. We'd love to hear feedback from you as well. You can email us at eminentteachnology@gmail.com. See y'all soon.